Becoming Visible, a moving memoir into the private fostering of Nigerian children by white families. In this book, Abby shares her life story, a black child handed over to a white foster family at the tender age of 5 weeks old. She recalls her turbulent experiences during times of acute racism and ignorance. Abby shares the overwhelming challenges laid out before her with honesty, courage, and resilience. Through these experiences, she became stronger and began to inspire and empower others as a global holistic leadership coach. She is a keen advocate of eradicating generational traumas through the natural healing forces of nature. It is her belief that by embracing the power to reconnect and rewrite our own stories, we help others to do the same. Chapter 3, Internal Conflict. One of the most vivid memories I have of Nigerian mum was when she came to say goodbye to Jimmy and me. She planned to start a new life in Canada with her new husband, the Nigerian film producer, and their newborn son, Alfred. She wanted to break the news to us personally. Her last visit happened on a Saturday afternoon. I was up and about, outdoors, balancing myself on a low brick fence at the front of the house. As was the architectural trend of the 60s, shards of glass stood up along the top of the wall on which I teetered precariously. They were probably both a design quirk and a security feature, and I was focused on avoiding their sharp edges. But I was young and still not quite nimble on my feet. In an instant, I slipped and cut my leg on one of the protruding pieces. I didn't make a big deal out of it, but washed off the blood that came oozing out of the wound. Once it stopped flowing, I went back to my teetottering. That was how I received Nigerian mum's arrival, balanced dangerously on the fence and already wounded. On that visit, Nigerian mum took my hand in hers, and I found myself staring up at her statuesque figure. As always, she was very well put together. She wore heavy makeup and eyebrows that were painstakingly penciled on her face, like triumphal arches. As was the fashion of Nigerian women of the day, she wore a flowing floral blouse with long collars and bell sleeves, flared trousers and chunky wedged heels. She blended perfectly into a place like Selfridges. As she stood beside me, Nigerian mum explained that I should no longer expect to see her, as she was going to live in a faraway place. I listened, but nothing she said moved me. In my mind, I thought it odd that she should say that when I had already gotten used to her absence. She had never been a presence in my childhood, so her move made no difference to me. Any iota of yearning for her maternal attention had long dwindled away. But I could see that she was excited, so I let her prattle on about her plan. At some point, she pulled out a wristwatch from her purse and offered it to me as a gift. It had a pink and gold face, and its strap was pink. The hour and the minute hands were shaped like leaves. From that point on, I was mesmerized by the watch and fixated on it for the rest of the time that Nigerian mum spoke. I recall that it was the very first gift she had ever given me. So it left an indelible mark in my memory. The giver was insignificant and fading as fast as the train that took her back to London.